on November 8th in New York City. We had gotten in at about 5 in the morning from our last day on the campaign trail.
The date of the presidential election, I was in New York City, very excited for President Trump to win the election.
November 8th, 2016, I helped kick off CNN's Election Day coverage. I went in, I found a pantsuit, I put a pantsuit on.
On November 8th.
November 8th.
November 8th.
November 8th, 2016.
We're exactly 1 year out from the 2016 presidential election. And I think 365 days ago, quite a few women in this country believed that we'd have a woman president. And as we all know, that didn't happen. But that day, November 8th, 2016, was still a historic moment, one that we could still learn a lot of lessons from. In today's episode, we're going behind the curtain on what happened on Election Day, and we're doing it with no small amount of hindsight. We spoke to the women behind the presidential candidates about what they remember of November 8th, the pressures of the day, the moments, big and small, that still stick with them even a year later. And importantly, we heard what they learned from it all, where they are now, and what it means to be a woman on the campaign trail. This is Women Rule, and I'm Carrie Budoff-Brown, editor of Politico. We spoke with a member of the Trump campaign and of the Clinton campaign, and we spoke with a campaign staff supporting Senators Bernie Sanders, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz. Stay tuned as we revisit what happened 1 year ago today. On the Women Rule podcast, we'll be bringing you backstage with women leaders, the big bosses in politics and policy. If you're a fan of the show, please subscribe to Women Rule on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us and leave a review. And please share our episodes on social media and follow me on Twitter at @CBudoffBrown. Women Rule is produced by Politico in partnership with our founding partners, Google and the Tory Burch Foundation. And now a word from our presenting sponsor, Chevron. When more girls go into science, technology, engineering, and math, the whole world benefits. With the support of families, schools, policymakers, and businesses, girls can do remarkable things with STEM. Chevron is proud to join Women Rule in empowering the next generation of female leaders. November 8th, 2016. It was a calm day for some.
That day, it was really almost like another day in the office.
Others were excited to watch what they had thought was inevitable.
I always expected him to win the election. I always expected him to win the election.
But for a lot of people, it was a fraught, tense 24 hours.
I woke up feeling terrible.
That's Jennifer Palmieri. She was a communications director for Hillary Clinton's campaign.
I don't think it was a premonition. I just think that it was you, at least the way I get through hard campaigns, and this was the hardest on record, is you sort of cabin off your frustration, stress, until the end, and then it demands its due. So I woke up just feeling just in the very overwhelming sense of unease. I expected that she would win. I know that races are always closer than you think they're going to be. And I had expected that in the end, even though I think going in we had anywhere from like a 4 to 6 point lead nationally. Some people even had that higher. I figured that lead would probably end up being about 2.5 percentage points, which is about what it ended up doing, just not in the right places.
Hello.
Pam Bondi was a staunch Trump supporter, and she often campaigned with him while he was in Florida.
My name is Pam Bondi, and I'm the Attorney General of the state of Florida. And I last year volunteered on President Trump's campaign.
Like Jennifer, Pam was convinced her candidate would win.
You know, the day of the election, I really did not have jitters because I knew Florida.
But she experienced Election Day really differently.
So I felt a lot of pressure because, of course, I'm a Floridian, but it was pressure in a very exciting way.
I felt like there would be states that we lost that we didn't expect to lose. And everything this year was very unpredictable, very unconventional. So you sort of go into election night bracing for some surprises and for a win to being end up being harder than it was.
The night wore on, the electoral map turned redder, and the women realized slowly that Donald Trump would be president.
I'm like, what the hell is happening? This is like the Twilight Zone.
Take Simone Sanders. She was Bernie Sanders' national press secretary, so her campaign work ended months before November 8th.
I'm Simone D. Sanders. I am currently a communication strategist. I'm a Democratic strategist, and I'm the strategist for Priorities USA for their communications and political outreach. And in 2016, I was the national press secretary for Senator Sanders' presidential campaign.
She remembers watching the results roll in while she was on live television.
I went to my hotel. I was in New York. I went to my hotel. I went in. I found a pantsuit. I put a pantsuit on for election. I never wear pantsuits. Everybody that knows me knows I either have a dress on or some leggings. But I had a pantsuit on. We popped up, and I went over to MTV, and they did this digital thing with a bunch of millennials and a bunch of other folks. We were in there. We were feeling excited. Folks were like, I'm going over to the Javits Center. I was like, I got to go back on TV tonight, so I won't be at the Javits Center. But I was feeling good. And then I went over to the BET studios. BET was shooting a live, like, election day thing with a live audience. And Mark Lamont Hill was hosting. And we go in. I'm in the green room. And someone asks me to come out into the area where the tech team is. And I pop out. And they're like, what does this mean? And on the screen is a huge, is a map of Virginia. And they're like, what does this mean? The news is saying. I was like, well, that's red. And that's supposed to be blue. All of the intel that we had and all the polling that we had said, this is supposed to be blue right now. And at this time, it was around like 8:30. I'm like, the fact that this is not blue yet could be problematic. And if Virginia's off, that means everything else is off. And a bunch of other guests and people that were in there were like, oh, my God, what are you saying? I was like, I'm just giving you my professional opinion, okay? Y'all asked me what this meant. This is what it means. So we go back. We're getting dressed. We are all eating dinner. And the maps just keep getting redder, and they keep getting redder, and they keep getting redder. And finally, Mark Lamont Hill is like, okay, we're all going to go on. So we go on, and, like, T.I. is there, Jadenna, and T.I. is like, look, I told y'all what was going to happen. And I'm just like, no, guys, you know, it's not over. There's still time in the map. You know, we just have to kind of wait and see. All the numbers aren't in and places all across the country. And then Omarosa calls in to the BET show. And Omarosa's like, I knew Donald Trump would be president. The day has come. And, you know, I know Omarosa. So she's calling in. I'm actually on set. And I'm like, Omarosa, the numbers are not in yet. Donald Trump's campaign is about. So I go through all, you know, the talking points, bigotry, misogyny, racism. And then the numbers just keep getting worse for Hillary Clinton. And I'm sitting in there's a live studio audience. So there's 200 people in there. And every time we cut to commercial break, folks are like, wait, what is actually happening? I'm like, I think Donald Trump is about to be president. And we come back from commercial, from like our third or fourth commercial break. I don't know the exact, this was the, whenever the moment is that the AP projected that Donald Trump was going to be president, I don't remember what time that was, but I remember I was on Twitter. And when they projected that Donald Trump was going to be president, we came back from commercial break, and Mark Lamont Hill is like, I didn't think I'd be sitting here saying this, but Donald Trump is projected to be the 45th president of the United States. And I am sitting there dumbfounded because I never thought Donald Trump would be elected president. And I immediately say, I said, well, the majority of Americans today, they voted for misogyny, bigotry, racism, and this is a dark day in America. It is a dark day. And we stayed on air for maybe another hour. We went late. We stayed on air for another hour because we didn't know if Hillary Clinton was going to come out.
That was the view from outside the Clinton campaign. But from inside its ranks,
it's a dawning, right? Because what it is it's not someone doesn't come up and says, you've lost. It's that your window of winning starts to narrow. And, you know, at first you have over 100 combinations that can get you to 270, and then you have 50, and then you have 10, and then you have 1.
That's Jen Palmieri. She remembered feeling a tide shift as one swing state after another went to Trump.
The senior staff was gathered at and at the Peninsula Hotel, and we were working out of there. And around, I'm not sure exactly the time, I think probably around 7:30, Florida started to not look great. North Carolina didn't look good, but I didn't expect that we were going to win North Carolina anyway. And then Virginia started sliding, and you weren't sure if we had a problem in the South or if we had a problem everywhere. But eventually, by, say, probably 9 o'clock or so, it became clear that there were problems in most of the states. Most of the states, we were off, you know, 2 or 3 percentage points from where we had expected to be. It was starting to spell real trouble.
So you just heard from Jennifer Palmieri and Simone Sanders, two Democratic campaign operatives working very different jobs on election night. But we also wanted to see whether Republican women had similar experiences on November 8th, 2016.
Catherine Frazier, I am the communications director for Senator Cruz in the Senate. During his presidential campaign, I was his national press secretary.
My name is Jessica Ennis, and I'm currently a senior director at Bravo Group, which is a public relations and advocacy firm based in Pennsylvania. In 2016, I was the national political director for Marco Rubio's campaign for president.
And the answer, it seems, is yes. Senator Ted Cruz came in second in the GOP primary, and he eventually endorsed Donald Trump. But even Cruz's staff recalls a slow realization that Trump would be president.
So that night, there were a couple of election parties we went to. I think we dropped by the Politico party, and then we ended up at a party. I cannot remember whose it was, but we were watching the map, and all of a sudden, you know, the tables were turning. You saw these states being won that no one expected Trump to carry. And late that night, we were realizing, you know, holy wow, he could actually win this. And where did we end up? We ended up at like Shake Shack at midnight or 1 a.m. grabbing burgers. It was an incredible thing to watch. I mean, a historic moment. I think almost everyone was caught by surprise, even the Trump campaign.
Here's Jessica, who by then was working on a Senate campaign.
Election Day 2016, I was in Raleigh, North Carolina. I spent the last several months of the 2016 cycle working with the National Republican Senatorial Committee on one of the most competitive Senate races in the country, which was Richard Burr's reelection campaign in North Carolina. So I just remember talking about it with one of my friends in North Carolina, one of my colleagues, and you know, it was just kind of surprising because there was a lot going on in the news right at that time that made you think, you know, this is not going to happen. But then you just couldn't deny what you were kind of seeing with the numbers.
Each woman watched the same speeches. Three of them watched from New York. Jessica was in North Carolina. Catherine tuned in from D.C. Here's what happened in the moments that followed.
I returned to my hotel and my phone rang.
Pam, again, Florida's attorney general, received a call from the president-elect himself.
My friend's daughter had changed several of my ringtones the week before, and they changed some of my best friends to some of our favorite songs, and they had changed the president's to Hail to the Chief. But he hadn't called since they had changed it on my phone. So I'm back to my hotel room, and it had to be well after 2 a.m., and my phone rings, and I am hearing Hail to the Chief. And I'm like, what is that? And so I answered it, and it was then current-elect President Trump. He was driving home with his wife and just called to say, you know, Pamela, we did it, and we won Florida. And he was happy, but he was very, very humbled. And he said some very nice things about Secretary Clinton at the time in a conversation that they had had, that she had called him. And, you know, it was just pretty surreal. That moment was surreal.
Soon after, Catherine spoke to GOP runner-up Ted Cruz.
I will never forget hearing the senator's reaction, because, you know, obviously that was a unique time, to say the least, for us and for our, you know, our team after everything we had gone through in the months before. The senator had the most optimistic attitude, and he was genuinely excited seeing that Republicans had taken the White House, the Senate, and the House, and that we had majorities, you know, all across the board. And he basically sat the team down and was like, look, this is our time. We are going to be able to have a part in implementing all of these things that we've talked about for so long. Rolling back regulations, tax reform, repealing Obamacare. And it really set the stage to what has been a phenomenal year for him in the Senate, and I think for the whole team, just being able to really see some of these things we've been talking about for so long come to fruition.
Jennifer and Simone, the Democratic operatives, both remember leaping to action, searching for next steps.
I thought that was absolutely crazy. I'm like, first of all, Donald Trump is never going to be elected president. He just, like, once the Access Hollywood tapes came out, I was like, oh, absolutely no one's going to elect this man president of the United States. So all I could think about was that concept of apocalyptic productivity and, like, what would be the silver lining in the fact that Donald Trump is now elected? Like, this is happening. I woke up the next morning, I'm like, it happened. This is terrible, but it happened. So where do we go from here? How do we, like, what is the next step? What is the next move? How do we even continue? How do we put together a plan to execute? Because no one had a plan for Donald Trump to be president, not even Donald Trump.
I was suspicious immediately. Like, this is not turning out the way that we thought that it would. And we know that the Russians have been, you know, had been trying to not just influence the election through Podesta's emails and WikiLeaks, but also at that point had already heard, it was already public knowledge that they had attempted at some point in the year to get into some of the different states' data banks for voting. And was this, so it's like immediately, I was like, this is not what we expected, so we should fight on. You know, so on election night, I'm still thinking recount opportunities, electoral college. And so absorbed election night as a very bad night and as a surprise, but not necessarily as the end. It made sense to me that given how hard the rest of the campaign had been, it made sense to me that, you know, like, why did we think we would win outright easily on election night? Like, why would that be the one night that would turn out as predicted? It was hard to wrap your head around the fact that you weren't, you know, you just sort of nod and say, okay, well, like, tomorrow we'll figure out what we're going to do. And then you remember there is no tomorrow.
We'll be right back with more Women Rule, but first, a word from our presenting sponsor, Chevron. When more girls go into science, technology, engineering, and math, the whole world benefits. With the support of families, schools, policymakers, and businesses, girls can do remarkable things with STEM. Chevron is proud to join Women Rule in empowering the next generation of female leaders. Flash forward a year later to today, November 8th, 2017. After a year of reflection, the women we talked to agree that there was a lot they didn't realize in 2016. Here's Simone Sanders.
What I know today that I didn't know on November 8th is that the Trump campaign had a highly organized campaign apparatus, more organized than I think any of us actually thought. I think there's a lot of things on the Sanders campaign that if we had a chance to do it again, we'd do it differently. Like, we barely put money in the March 1 states and the Super Tuesday states. Had we done that, we would have been more competitive on the delegate count. But we lost severely on the delegate count on Super Tuesday, and we weren't able to make up that deficit. So we would have done that. We didn't know we were going to raise so much money. When I first came on the campaign, I started in August 7th in 2015. The conversation was, look, if we can raise $50 million by February, we'll be good. We raised $50 million by, like, September, August, September. So I don't think we even understood the scale to which our campaign could have grown. So there are lots of different things, but I definitely think we all underestimated Donald Trump. We would have taken him more seriously.
Catherine said that the Cruz campaign maybe should have taken some cues from Trump's strategy.
Of course, there were strategic decisions made that I think in hindsight you wish you had done differently. One thing I have to say for the Trump campaign where I think they just blew everyone out of the water was their ability to drive the news cycle. He was up early. He was tweeting. He was calling into morning shows. And he was setting the stage for what everyone was going to talk about that day. And that's something that we could have probably done a lot better in terms of a news narrative and driving communications and messaging. We would have got out there earlier in the day, probably done more shows in the morning, more interviews in the morning. We were the runner-up out of 17 primary candidates. So we have a lot to be proud of. But I think that one aspect of driving the news cycle is something we could have done better.
The Rubio campaign, too, struggled to get ahead of the narrative.
I think we've just seen really how the narrative shapes reality.
Here's Jessica.
You know, there were several instances during the primary where, something would happen and just the narrative coming out from that event just really shaped the reality. And it was hard to kind of get around the message that you wanted to get out because of kind of what was being presented. So learning about creating a narrative before someone else defines it for you was a big takeaway for me.
But Attorney General Pam Bondi says the number one thing about the Trump campaign that people misunderstood wasn't his campaign tactics, but his voters.
I feel like the polls were missing the true number of people around this country who were supporting them. And that's really, I think, the part that wasn't truly reported. When we were in South Florida, the auditorium was not only filled, I remember leaving and seeing people lined up for literally miles and miles, and it was probably in the 90s that day. It was so hot outside. And they weren't people single file. They were 4, 5, 6, 10 people deep on the street, lined up, waiting to see a presidential candidate. And I'd never seen that in my lifetime.
On the Clinton side, what they didn't know is something we still don't know.
I think when I went into that campaign, I didn't appreciate how hard it is to elect, what a radical idea it is when you look at the course of human history for a woman to be in charge. And we'd already elected our first black president. I didn't think that electing a first woman president was I thought that that would not be as hard. And they're different, but it is, it's not easy. And I think that what we set out to do was prove that Hillary had all the qualities that people look for in a president, which we did, but it's all the qualities you looked for in a male president because that's the only model that we had. I'm not sure, as we sit here now, that there was anything to be done about that in real time because I think maybe she, as the first woman, she needed to go through this process. As the first woman in her generation, women across the board in their different professions had this same moment. You can do this job or you can run for this office, but we expect you to do it the way a man does. And now we've done that. Depending on how you keep score, she's won. She's proven that a woman can win an election for president. And I hope that the next woman, we have a broader sense of women leadership so that it's not just in the model of a man, which I think is just a hard suit, if you will, for a woman to have to wear.
Through talking to these women, we learned wearing a suit behind the scenes isn't that much easier. As they reflected on 2016, these political operatives described to us what it's like to be a woman on a campaign.
I like to joke so many times, I was the only, there wasn't a ponytail or any, or let alone melanin in some of the rooms that I was in. And I don't have a ponytail, so.
Here's Simone.
When I would walk out of the door and go out on the campaign trail, get on the plane, wherever we're going, people automatically, they did not just notice that I was a woman, they noticed that I was a young African-American woman, like on the Bernie Sanders campaign. This is when I first met Senator Sanders, when I was still interviewing, if you will, and I came into his office, it was just he and I, we sat down, had a very robust conversation about everything, about juvenile justice, education, the economy, and how his message, and how there are lots of people that would say, sir, as I said, look, sir, there's lots of people that would say, your message doesn't take into account the systemic racism that folks deal with every single day in life. For some people, it doesn't matter how much money you make, where you went to school, what kind of job you have. When they walk out of the house every day, they're just, quote unquote, black, or they're just Latino, or they're just Asian American, or Asian American Pacific Islander, or they're just Native American. So we talked about how the economy and addressing racism are parallel and actually intertwined issues that have to be addressed simultaneously and together. We can't talk about closing the wealth gap without talking about racism and how black and brown families have been locked out of wealth for a really long time. And so that kind of colored a lot of the things, how we engaged on the campaign trail, some issues, and that spiraled into our creating our racial justice platform, which addressed the five different types of violence people of color in America experience every single day.
Simone very nearly didn't get in the room for these conversations. As she tells it, she was stopped more than once.
There were multiple times when I would go out on the campaign trail when I first started and I could not get into the building. I literally could not get in because this is before we had Secret Service. Let me tell you, Secret Service makes your life amazing. Secret Service, everybody gets in. We ride in really nice big cars. You're going back in this area. They make sure you eat because Bernie also didn't like to stop to eat. So there were some times when Secret Service had to be like, sir, we all have to eat. Can we have lunch? Can we feed the people? But before Secret Service, we were riding around in Fords and Toyotas and getting to the venue separately. And so I would often go ahead of the senator because I needed to get there, like help out like our press team on the ground, if you will, and just get ready. And earlier in the campaign, I introduced him, Senator Sanders, a lot of the rallies and things that we went to. And I remember going, getting out, and I was going to the door, and folks are like, this is for staff only. And I'm like, well, great, I'm staff. And they were like, what kind of staff are you? I said, well, I am the national press secretary. You might have seen me on television. I'm gonna need to get in there. And they're like, no, you need to go around to the front. This happened like for 2 months straight on when we would go places. And it's not just places in the South, it's places all over America. And there was once where I was so late that folks were calling me. They were like, the senator's like, where are you? We want to start the rally. I was like, well, I'm outside. And if someone would like the rally to start, they need to get me in this damn building. So that is not something that I think anybody thought about. That's an experience that I don't know who else, you know, was having that. But I know we had some other younger people of color who worked on our campaign staff, who were lower levels, who were you know, junior staffers. And if I can't get in, they surely can't get in the building. And so I brought this to Senator Sanders, and I told one day it was I had a really tumultuous time getting in. I remember I called our staff when I was on my way, and I said, can you just please let them know that I'm coming, that I am bald, and that I'm black, because I don't want to have a problem today. I'm not in the mood for it, because it was happening all week. And I get to the first checkpoint, and they give me a little trouble, and they're like, oh, okay, no, you're on the list. They let me through. I get to the second point. They're like, who are you? And I'm like, look, I'm national press. I need to get in, and they let me through. Then I get to this third area where they've reserved a parking spot for me. I pull my car in there, and these event guys come running up to my car, banging in my window, telling me to get the F out of there. This isn't for little girls. Just all kind of yelling racial slurs, all kinds of things. And I just break down in my car, and I'm just crying. I am just sobbing, and I'm calling our event staff, and I'm like, can somebody come down again? I am just bawling my eyes out. So our like head people that come down, they shoo the people away. They also address the venue staff because that was totally inappropriate. And they take me up to the holding area, and they're like, we're so sorry this is happening to you. And I hadn't said anything to anybody about it, you know, really before. And then Senator Sanders and his wife Jane come in maybe 15 minutes after me. So I'm in the bathroom trying to pull it together, dab it, that makeup is all just running. I'm trying to just dab it together because we have to go out here, greet these people, do a pre-interview, then we need to go introduce him. And they come in, and I'm like, oh, hello. And Jane's like, what's wrong? And I was like, sometimes I go places that I can't get in. And Bernie is like, what? What is going on? So I explained to them that, like, this is something that happens to me, and I don't know who else can't get in, sir, but I would just like to come to work like everybody else comes to work. And he goes out into his speech that night. He spends a little extra time on the section where he talks about, it's a section in his speech where he said, you know, he's like, as a white man in America, I don't know what it feels like to not be let into a space because I'm a woman or because of the color of my skin. He said, but because we don't experience those things does not mean we should not fight against them and work to make it better. And I really appreciated that because we also got badges, and I was never not let into a building ever again. But that let me know that he was listening to what I said, and that me sharing my experience with him, an experience that maybe other people had not had on the campaign trail, made a difference for other folks who probably didn't want to speak up.
Beyond bringing personal experience to decision-making, Catherine from Cruz's campaign says the skills intrinsic to women changed her approach to packaging the candidate.
As a woman working with Senator Cruz and, you know, being an advisor on both a policy and political side, I think I bring advice to the table that add a personal element to who he is. That's something that I always think about is, you know, how can we show people that Senator Cruz is, you know, is a normal human being, just like everyone else in so many ways. And I think that's something that women in general just think about a lot more, how to personally connect with people.
It's still important to have both male and female advisors, even when the candidate is a woman, Jennifer told us. She said she saw a palpable difference in the way men and women interpreted the election environment.
And all of the, you know, the women that came forward and accused Trump of sexual assault and harassment, and it felt very dark. I once described it, how many times during the campaign described it as the Batman movie version of a presidential campaign, you know, like really dark. Overly stylized villains like Putin and Julian Assange, that you had to get it. It's both from Gotham. You had the state of the world did hang in the balance. And I feel that, and women felt that, you know, you felt it was like, it was almost as if it was a primal battle. And I think that the men on the campaign didn't feel that intensely, that this campaign was something different. I think I was more likely to bring to Hillary's attention, a theory that this is about the kind of country we are, not just about what your economic plan.
Most of the women we interviewed expected a very different 2017, both for the country and for themselves. We asked them what stories would have dominated news cycle after news cycle if someone other than Donald Trump were president.
Oh my goodness, if Hillary Clinton was president, they'd still be talking about those damn emails. They absolutely would be talking about the emails. We would have had 4 additional hearings about the emails by now.
There'd be huge stories about, oh my God, Chelsea Clinton's on the board of the foundation and she had lunch with her mother and what was on the menu, and maybe Hillary was trying to convey some secret message to Chelsea to tell somebody who's contributing to the foundation. You know, just like absurd. I fear that we would have stayed locked in our Titanic struggle with the press over money issues and process issues around the Clintons. And I'm sure that the Republican Congress would not have been very kind to her. And there could be actual impeachment hearings happening this, you know, in the Congress over Benghazi round 8 or what have you. And that would not have been fun to live through.
They also told us where they think they would have been on November 8th, 2017, if their candidate had won the election. Here's Catherine, who worked on Cruz's campaign.
That's a fun question. Well, I, of course, would have wanted to work in, you know, in his administration. I don't know what I would have done. I obviously love comms and I love working with press. And so something along those lines.
And Simone?
Well, I would have hoped I'd be working in some place in the administration in a communications capacity. I literally thought that's what I'd be doing. I'd be working in the administration in the communications capacity, either as a press secretary or a deputy press secretary in an agency, and trying to change the world like all the millennials want to do.
And Jennifer.
I probably would have gone with her to the White House and worked in it, and I think it would have been very hard and very frustrating. Nuclear war would have continued to remain unimaginable. But I don't imagine that there is there's a parallel universe where there's this paradise of how great the Hillary Clinton presidency would have been to work in. I think it would have been a real struggle.
After a year of reflection, many of the women have taken lessons they learned during the once-in-a-lifetime campaign and are using them to make an impact, including, in Jessica's case, by speaking on this podcast.
So I've been working at the state and local and national level in campaigns and politics for 20 years, and I've managed to never go on the record in all those years. But when approached about doing this, I wanted to be a part of the conversation. I was given an opportunity to do something really incredible, to be a part of a national, incredible presidential campaign with an amazing candidate at a senior level. And that was an experience that I really value. It was a big part of my life. And I want to encourage other women who are interested in pursuing a similar thing or who are maybe just getting started out in their political career. I felt it was important to talk about my experience so that they know that it's worth pursuing and it's worth sticking in there and staying in the game.
So here we are on this podcast. It could have been about our first year with a woman in the White House. So when will we produce that episode? The women we spoke to don't seem to think Hillary's loss necessarily indicates that episode is so far away. This is how Hillary's communications director put it.
My theory is that once the women of America faced November 9th, whether you even aside from politics, if you voted for Hillary or not, or if you like Donald Trump or not, I think there's a sense that we have plateaued, that you can only get so far following the rules of politics and sort of the rules of professional life for women. You're only able to get so far. And largely we've been following an old model, a model that's based on men. And what I am inspired by and am optimistic about now is that you see women, you know, across the country are running for office in enormous numbers. They are participating civically, whether that is in protests or caring about their community. They're doing, you know, they are engaged in hurricane efforts. They're engaged in registering people to vote. And I think that we've seen, okay, anything's possible now, and we're writing our own rules and imagining women a new image of leadership and their own image. I'm not one of those people there are a lot of political practitioners who think that it's not possible for a woman to be the nominee in 2020. And I just don't think that's true. I think that there aren't any more, there are no rules in politics, that there haven't ever been rules in politics. It's just who's willing to try to break them.